morning, everyone. As usual, first of all, I'm going to start off by thanking the organizers for giving me the opportunity to once again take part in the start of the Torah Way. As I say, it's a special honor and something I constantly look forward to, and I hope it's likewise.
Yeah.
All right. This week's Parsha, Parsha Shmini, there's one of the most famous Rashis, a very famous Rashi, which seemingly doesn't really make sense, and there's many pshutim on this Rashi. The pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Aaron HaKohen, Krav el HaMizbeach. So Rashi says, Sh'oyu, Aharon boish v'yurei lugeishes. Aharon HaKohen was embarrassed and he was scared to go and do the karbunas. We're talking about the Shmini Lemeliyim, it was the eighth day. It was after 7 days that Moshe Rabbeinu built up the Mishkan, took it apart, built it up again, took it apart. And now is the eighth day when finally Aharon HaKohen took over the job. And he was scared to go, he was scared to do the karbunas. So Moshe Rabbeinu told him these words. He said, Lomo atu boish, why are you embarrassed? Lukach nefchartu. It's specifically because of this that you were chosen. Why are you embarrassed? You were chosen for this. Why is that an answer? Why are you embarrassed? You were chosen for this. That's not a good answer. He's scared to go because he's embarrassed. So what's the answer? You were chosen for this. So one of the pshutim that the Farshim say that it's specifically because of the embarrassment, it's because you are embarrassed, that's why you were chosen to be the person to go do that way. That's one pshat. So maybe we'll explain a little bit more this pshat. Rashi comes down. Rashi brings down that 7 days Moshe Rabbeinu was built up the Mishkan, took it apart, and there was no Shechinah. The Shechinah didn't come. They were waiting for the Shechinah. The Yidden were getting, they were getting impatient. Where's the Shechinah? We want Hashem to show us the proof that He has forgiven us for the Eigel. We want to see the Shechinah. Nothing doing. Moshe Rabbeinu told them, don't worry, wait till the eighth day. Then Aharon HaKohen, he will take over, and he is worthy. Aharon Uchi Kedai V'chush V'meni, he is greater than me. He'll do the job, you'll see, the Shechinah will come. And that's like we find in this Pusik, we find by the Shmini Lemediyim. It's exactly what happened. Aharon HaKohen took over on the eighth day, he built the Mishkan, and guess what? Yairu Aleichem Kved Hashem, immediately a fire came down from Hashem, ate up the kabunas, and Hashem accepted his kabunas. So the question is Aharon HaKohen more worthy than Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is trying for 7 days to bring the Shechinah, nothing doing. Aharon HaKohen comes along.
The Kabbalah is
going to
7 days.
Right, the Rashi brings down that the Shechinah was not Shoyrish. The Shechinah didn't come down into the Mishkan, whatever that means. The Shechinah was not there.
It says it was Shoyrish, right? He served. He didn't serve. I don't know what he did.
Whatever he did, Rashi brings down this thing that all the 7 days, called Shiva Samay Meliyim, the Moshe Rabbeinu built the Mishkan, lo yisharosu bo Shechinah. The Yidden were embarrassed. Moshe Rabbeinu, what's going on there? The Shechinah Banayin, where's the Shechinah? We want to see a proof that Hashem forgave us. So Moshe Rabbeinu told them, don't worry, Aharon Uchi Kedai V'chushu V'meni, you'll see when he's going to be Makrev his Karbunas, the Shechinah will be Shoyr. And then you will have a proof that Hashem forgave you. So there is something that Moshe Rabbeinu did as Avodah. Whatever he did, the Shechinah was not there. When Aharon HaKohen all of a sudden did the Avodah, the Shechinah was there. What is the answer to this? We all know, less than a week ago, Klal Yisrael lost one of the most greatest, or perhaps the greatest Torah giant in our generation, Chaim Kanievsky. Chaim Kanievsky, he was a giant, he was over 90 years, full of Torah, just non-stop Torah. The Gemara says, Talmud Chochem Shemais Hakel Kiroivov. Everyone is his relative. What is Hakel Kiroivov? Rebbe Yonason says that when a person, a wealthy person, goes away from the world, then only his children are his Kiroivim. His inheritance goes down only to his children, only to his immediate family. People who are far away family have not they gain nothing from it. Whereas Talmud Chochem Shemais, because everyone could gain, everyone could take out some lesson. There's something that he leaves over, an inheritance he leaves over to all of us, for the whole of Klal Yisrael. There's something that we could take out of his life and apply it to our life. So I'd like to focus on one thing. Obviously, there's many things that we can't even begin to compare. We can't even try talking about his Torah, his Torah knowledge, something which was unbelievable. His Hasmudas HaTorah, non-stop learning Torah, 18 hours, you know, a day. That's something we can't even try to begin to do. But then I think there's one point which we think we could, every single one of us could apply to our life, and that's the thing which I'd like to focus on. And let's start off with a question which people asked Chaim Kanievsky, what was the secret? He was zoicha to such siyata d'shmaya. Talking about siyata d'shmaya, when it comes to rochnias, he was zoicha to be mechava so many svurim, he was zoicha to such encyclopedic knowledge in Torah, he was zoicha to such mesikas in Torah, to such sweetness in Torah. What was, that's one point. Another thing we found in his life was the tremendous amount of mofsim he did, the amount of yeshuas people had, mamish, they said the things they thought, saw by him, the brachas he gave to people. What was his secret? Why, how was he able to do all that? And thirdly, he was zoicha to siyata d'shmaya in Gashmias. In Gashmias, yeah. Gashmias was zoicha to children who are tamid achachomim. He was zoicha to a long life. He lived well over 90. He was zoicha, he was financially stable also. He was zoicha to Gashmias also. Why is that? What is the secret of all of this? I'd like to suggest the following answer. And I think the secret is two words, and those are the two words which I'd like to focus on. And that is, I think, the thing that we could apply to our own life. And that thing is something called Kvias Itim Letoyre. And I'll explain what that means. Kvias Itim means, has two meanings. It could mean Kvias Itim as time. A person gives away a specific time that he's going to learn every single day. And it could also mean a limit kuvia, a specific limit, a specific subject, a specific topic which he says he accepts upon himself he will be learning every single day. The word kvias also has two meanings. Kvias could mean something which a person does regularly. It's boifen kuvia, he does it regularly. It's something which is consistent. He does it day in, day out. Kvias could also mean something which is, it's there, something which he does not budge. It's kuvia, it's something which stays in one place. Which means when a person accepts upon himself that he commits himself to doing something. He commits himself that nothing will budge him from his kvias. Both of these are included in the word of kvias itim latoyre. There was no one that had such kvias itim like Reb Chaim. Now I'm not talking about the time he spent on learning Torah, because that's something which obviously we cannot copy. But there is some. I'm talking about the fact that he committed himself to learn a specific limit, a specific topic a day. A whole sefer recently came out, which I saw, a whole sefer, that it's called the Chovus of Reb Chaim, the debt of Reb Chaim. He had so many debts that he owed so much. Not, I'm talking about money. I'm talking about he owed learning. He accepted upon himself a huge amount of limit of Torah that he will learn every single day, starting from Bavli, Yerushalmi, Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, Mishneh Berurah, Sefrus, Sefri, Tosefta, Zohar HaKodesh. The list goes on and on and on every single day. And he did not miss not even one day learning this amount, this huge majority. The cipher goes on to say how this took up his entire day. It was like a burden, it was something on his head. You couldn't compare Reb Chaim the beginning of the day to Reb Chaim at the end of the day. Because before he paid off his debts, he was very tense, and he couldn't talk to him. After he had so-called paid off all his debts of the day, he was so much more relaxed, because that was his burden. He couldn't sleep in the afternoon because he had to pay off his debts. He had so much to pay off still. And if he had a day that he went for a chasana or a bris and he couldn't end up doing what he had to do, he came back home and he sat down. He did not go to sleep until he finally paid off all his debts. That's called kvias itim. He was kvaya. Nothing will budge him from what he accepted upon himself to learn. The Moridi Chazal, we all know that a person is going to come up to Shemaim after 120 years. The first question they will ask him is Kuvatu Itim Latoyr. Now, if we're daik, Chazal don't say they're going to ask Lumadatu Torah, did you learn Torah? No, that's not the question. The question is Voyik Kuvay Itim Latoyr. That means, let's just give it as an example. Let's just put it on an example. Two people come up to Shemaim. One person gave away 1 hour a day to learning Torah. But that day, that hour was consistent, nothing could budge him. Every single day, day in, day out. A second person was not kavayit in the Torah, but he happened to have learned many, many more hours. Some days he learned 3 hours, other days he didn't learn at all. Altogether, his amount of hours was much more. The first person comes up to Shemaim, they ask him, kavayit in the Torah? He will say yes. Straight into Gan Eden. The second person, were you kavayit in the Torah? Not really. One day yes, one day not. He didn't pass the test. So he says, 1 second. I learned so much more Torah than him. How come that he passed this test and I didn't? So obviously there's something about this kviyas itim la Torah, which is something which is so chushev in shemayim, that's the only way a person will pass this test. What is so special about kviyas itim la Torah? I think the answer is as follows. The Gemara Brucha says, brings down, Repuppa asked Abaye, Maishu Rishonim, how could it be that in the previous generations, Nisim happened to them like nothing? When they didn't have any rain, they just took off the shoe, they davened to Hashem, rain came down. He said, nowadays, says, we daven the whole day, and nothing doing, the rain has not come down. And he says, when it comes to in terms of learning, that's what the Pope says, we are far, far greater than them in learning. So it's not the fact that they learned more than us. Abaye answered the Pope and he says the difference is very simple. In the previous generations, they were moisa nefesh for Torah, whereas now generations are not moisa nefesh in Torah. And I'd like to explain and expand on this point. That is as following. There is something called nature. There is something called anhogas ha-teva. The Rebbeinu Shlom created the world, which is run by nature. As long as a person is bound to nature, he's bound to have difficulties in his life. He's bound to have financial difficulties, health difficulties, different difficulties. Go around, look around at the wider world, you'll see there's hardly anyone who's having difficulties. The one way to get out of all this is if the person climbs out of his nature, then the Rebbeinu Shlom says, you climbed out of your nature, I will take you out of my nature. It is anhuge. Now that does not mean the person has to be moisa nefesh and jump into the fire and do things like that. All it means is one thing. The person has to climb out of his comfort zone. He has to climb out of his comfort zone and he has to do something which he generally would not have done. He has to do something which is a little bit more difficult to him to do. And then the Rebbeinu Shlom says, you went against your nature, I will now take you out of the nature. So Chazal HaGdoshim say, a promise of Tuch, Kol HaMekabel Urab Ol Torah, Maviren, Mimeni, Ol Malchus, Ol Derecheretz. A person who has Ol Malchus, he has taxes to pay, he has Ol Derecheretz, he has money to, he has so many things to do, and so many burdens in his life, the Rebbeinu Shlom says, Kol HaMekabel Urab Ol Torah, I will get rid of all of that. But Chazal don't say, if you will learn Torah, you will get rid of all that. It says, Kol HaMekabel Urab Ol Torah, a person who accepted it upon himself, he makes it a burden, he makes it to all, he makes it to kviyas. Only then does it help. Why is that? It's because a kviyas itim la Torah is a tremendous, tremendous mesiras nefesh. Because there are some days which are going to be difficult to come to learn. It's going to be very difficult. People have things to do and have to pull themselves away from the day-to-day life and commit themselves to learn that 1 hour a day or whatever it is, how much to learn. That is tremendously difficult. It's climbing out of the comfort zone. They would so much more have wanted to sit down on the couch and relax with a cup of tea and a newspaper. And instead, they pull themselves away from themselves and they sit down, they commit themselves to an hour of learning a day. That is going against the nature. That is against the nature. That's Mesiras Nefesh. So that, then the Torah says, you are Mesiras Nefesh, you will see. Kol HaMekabel Urab Ol Torah, Mavirim Emeni Ol Malchus Vol Derecheretz. I'd like just to share with you two small stories that I read yesterday on Reb Chaim, and I think that brings out very much this point. One story which was related by Reb Chaim Knievsky's son-in-law, Reb Shloime Steinman, he said the following. He said, we all know that Reb Chaim was extremely close to his uncle, the Chazon Ish. Extremely close, he basically was brought up together, and the Chazon Ish loved them to no end, and vice versa. He said it was that Chazon Ish passed away on the Shabbos, and Sunday, the Devai was only on Sunday. Reb Chaim says, those 2 days, he wasn't a person, he wasn't a mensch. He says, it was the two most difficult days in his life when his Rebbe, his most beloved Rebbe, passed away. He said, the Devai ended late on Sunday. He came back from the Devai and he was devastated. Talking about, he was emotionally drained, he was physically drained. It was after 2 days of not sleeping, not eating, not doing anything. And he says, 1 second, I've got my choivas, I've got my debts to pay back. I've got the daily amount of learning I have to pay back. He says, he knew one thing. Even if he would sit down to learn, he would not be able to concentrate on anything. His mind wasn't there. But he said to himself, that's not an excuse. I accepted upon myself to learn. I'm going to sit down and learn. And he says that's exactly what he did. He sat down to learn, and this is what he said. He said, I did not understand a single word that I learned. It simply didn't go in. I was so emotionally drained, I still couldn't understand anything. But I knew that I have no right to give up a Maya Kviya Sittim at all. That means Kviya Sittim. A person who is a lapish, and he pulls himself away from everything, and even if he's not going to understand, people very often say, what's the point of going to a Shia? I don't understand anyway, I fall asleep every single day anyway, what's the point? No. Reb Chaim Kanevsky said he learned even though he couldn't focus, he couldn't concentrate. That's not an excuse. The fact that you pulled yourself away, that is Mesilas Nefesh. One more story he related, he said he had Chavrusa for many, many years. He was very makpid that his Chavrusa shouldn't miss, not even one day. He had to commit to come every single day. His Chavrusa told him, I would love to commit to come every single day, but I have a problem. Every single year in the middle of the winter, I have a bad flu. My body is very sensitive, and every single year, without fail, I'm in bed for a few weeks from this flu. I just know it's going to happen again, so there's no way I could commit myself to come every single day. Reb Chaim Kanevsky told him, he says, don't you worry. You commit yourself, and the rest, Hashem will take care of. He said, the Chavrisa, he did that. He said, he committed himself to come every single day, and he said, every single day, and the winter came, nothing doing, the flu was not there. And he was so surprised, he couldn't understand what's going on, and he came every single day. One day, towards the end of the winter, summer was already coming in, he had a psychasm, he had something that he just simply couldn't miss, it was a close relative, and he thought to himself, you know what, this is something I can't bring myself to miss. So that one day, he didn't come to Reb Chaim. That day he caught the flu, and he ended up being in bed for 2 weeks. So Reb Chaim said, had he not missed that one day, had he continued coming every single day, the flu wouldn't have hit him. That is, I think, the secret of all of his tremendous mofsim that he did. How was he able to make so many mofsim and give yeshuas to people left, right, and center? The answer is very simple. There's no bigger mysterious nefesh than that kviya sittim. If a person is moisa nefesh to Hashem, then Hashem says, listen, medika neged vidde, you pull yourself out of nature, I will take you out of nature. There's an interesting Chazal HaGdoshim say, and Rashi brings it down in Parshas, Yisroi, kol haschulis hushas. Whenever a person starts doing anything spiritual, there always is going to be difficulty at the beginning. Why is that? Asks the Kunim Yufus. Why did Hashem make it this way, that whenever a person accepts upon himself, it always is going to be difficult? And it's something we could see, it's something which is a fact. You see Baal HaTshuvos, they become Baal HaTshuvos and they become closer to Hashem. Just as they accept upon themselves to become closer to Hashem, all of a sudden they have tremendous nisyonos in Rochnis, have tremendous challenges when it comes to spiritual challenges. Why is it all of a sudden, just after they accepted themselves, it's because of kolos chulos kushos. Every beginning is difficult. Why is that? Why did Hashem make it that way? Hashem should have done it the other way around. The beginning should be easy, and once the person is already used to it, only then should it become difficult. Zuk the Punim Yufus, it says, spirituality does not connect with physicality. A person who is in nature cannot connect with Torah, cannot have a geshmak in Torah. A person has to first take himself out of the nature. He has to be moisa nefesh to a certain extent. Only then will he be able to feel the sweetness of Torah. Dr. Hashem specially made it this way, that kolos chulos kushos, that the beginning should be difficult. So this way the person has to pull himself out of nature, he has to go against his nature. Once he does that, and Hashem, he says, from now on, if the Torah will become sweet. It could only become sweet once the person has pulled himself out of the nature. And if you medayek b'lashon Rashi, Rashi says, Rashi doesn't say, if you're going to continue learning, it will become sweet. Rashi says, Ematu tekabli alaychem. It only comes after kabul, after the person commits himself to learning, and he's moisa nefesh himself, only then the Torah promises him, mikam v'aylich yerev lechem, it will become sweet. And this thing is in every single spiritual, anything spiritual person wants to do, he has to first go through the stage of Mesidas Nefesh, and then it becomes sweet. We see Benachshon ben Amenudov, he stood by the Kriyas Yamsiv, the first thing he had to do is jump into the water, he had to be Moisa Nefesh himself, and from then on, the sea split itself, and everything went wonderful. The same thing is in any Rochniastig thing, first the person has to prove to Hashem that he's going to break the barriers, he's going to pull himself out of nature, and Hashem promises him that mekam va'aylich, you will see the spitting of the sea, you will see that things will open up and things will become sweet and wonderful. So this is something which I think we could all apply to our own life. We all, Baruch Hashem, are kavayit in the Torah. Some more, some less, some all depends on the people and it depends on the schedule. But the question is, how much are we committed to it? How much do we say to ourselves, this 1 hour, then the whole world is closed down. There's nothing going on. My telephone is closed down. I have nothing, the whole world. This 1 hour is completely Torah, and no matter how difficult it will be, I will never ever give away this hour of Torah. If the person does that, then he is quiet in the Torah. Then he's pulling himself away from nature. He's going beyond his own comfort zone, and then the Rebbeinu Shlomo promises him that he will be zoicha to all these wonderful things that we mentioned before. I think that this perhaps could be the answer of Aharon HaKohen. We started off, why was Aharon HaKohen zoicha to give his shechinah? So I think the answer is, he understands this. For Aharon HaKohen, it was tremendously difficult to be makir the kavunas. Like Rashi says, Shoyu Aharon Yure Iboish Legeshis. He was embarrassed because he knew that he did the eagle, and he was extremely embarrassed to be makir the kavunas. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, for you, you are going against your nature. Because for you it's difficult to be makir the kavunas. It is precisely you who are going to be the one who is going to be able to bring Gilish Chinah. Because for me, Moshe Rabbeinu said, for me it's not difficult to do it. So for me it's not Masiris Nefesh. But Lekach Nefchato, you were chosen specifically because for you it's something so difficult. That's why you were chosen to be the one to be makir the kavunas. And that's why he was takazoich v'yayro reichem kavod Hashem, that he was able to bring down the Gilish Chinah. Something that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do, and he was able to do. I'd like to finish off with a most amazing story, a true story which happened less than 2 weeks ago, and it's a story which I heard firsthand. So it's not a secondhand story, I heard it from the person himself. Yeah, so it's a story which all the facts are 100% true, and I'm even going to give you all the names also. There's a person in Eretz Yisrael called Naftuli Kohen, Rav Naftuli Kohen. He's a moil, and he travels internationally to make milah, to do brisim for people. 2 weeks ago, I get the telephone call that there is a couple in the town of Odessa. Odessa, that's a town in Ukraine, that just had a baby, and the bris will be on Friday. It's Friday 2 weeks ago, Friday Pashas Vayikra. And they need someone, a moil, to come and do a bris. Now, we all know, Odessa is not one of the ideal places to go for holiday, that one would now go for holiday. It's a place which is surrounded by Russian troops, and it's right next to the Black Sea, which has about 21 battleships ready to attack the town. Bombs flying overhead, and people are fleeing left, right, and center. And there's a curfew after 5 o'clock. If you leave the house after 5 o'clock, you are shot to death, no questions asked. So it's not precisely the most ideal place where a person would choose to go for holiday. He made the following thing. He told his friend, he says, I got a kabbalah from his rebbe. I think he heard it from the Shaykh Talaibi, from Revozn. Revozn said, someone who goes to do a bris, then he promises nothing will ever happen to him bad. Okay, so he had this promise from his rebbe. Problem is, his wife just gave birth 2 days earlier. So to leave his wife behind, to go away, and that means he will be stuck there for Shabbos. The bris will be on Friday afternoon, he'll be stuck there for Shabbos. He said, he told his brother, I can't do it, because try and find someone else. But sure enough, he didn't find anyone else, and it's not a surprise to me that he couldn't find anyone else. His brother calls him up Thursday morning to say, listen, I booked your ticket this afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You have a flight booked from Tel Aviv to the town called Kishinev. I'm not sure where that is. It's Bulgaria, I don't know where it is. It's somewhere on the border of Ukraine. It's not in Ukraine, it's next to Ukraine. I booked you a ticket. He comes there and he goes on the flight. It was an empty flight. 3 people in the whole flight. Him and another 2 people who happened to be Yidden, who had gone there to help the Ukrainian refugees. So that was the entire flight, 3 people. He takes the flight, he gets into Kishinev. And now he has to get from Kishinev into Ukraine. Now, they have a driver who smuggles everyone in and out of Ukraine. Nowadays, in order to get out of Ukraine, if you're between the ages of 18 and 60, you need to be smuggled out. So they have the famous guy, Alexei, he does all the smuggling for them. He was going to drive him into Ukraine. Alexei did not turn up. For some reason, he didn't turn up. He had to find a way to get in. The bris is going to be the next afternoon. So he calls up to where all the taxis are standing, and he asks one taxi after the other. Sure enough, no one has any interest in going into Ukraine, the last thing they want to do. Finally, he finds an old Ukrainian guy who said he's willing to do it, but he has to pay him $1,000. Now, don't forget, usually it would cost about $7-$8 to be able to travel. In Ukraine, you can get it for pennies. $1,000 for an hour's journey from the border to Odessa. Didn't have much of a choice. He only had $500 on him. He said, okay, I agree. He called up the rabbi in Odessa, Rabbi Bax. He said, I want you to prepare for me another $500. It's going to cost $1,000. Okay. He starts going in. He gets to the border. And sure enough, he's stopped by a group of five huge, burly Ukrainian soldiers. They pull him out, says, what are you doing here? So open up the suitcases. And he showed them a certificate to say that he's a doctor. He's coming in for medical things. They opened up his Miele kit. They see all these different creams and things inside. They were sure that we're talking about drugs. They said, come with us. They left him there outside. They took the whole suitcase away. They kept him there for 5 hours straight. Now, he was freezing cold. 5 hours straight. 5 hours he was sitting there, freezing cold, waiting for them to bring back his suitcase. And he said, Hashem, believe me, I did not regret 1 minute for coming, because I know I'm doing it for your sake, it's Mesilas Nefesh, but I'm committing myself to do it all the way. This driver was getting so anxious, this driver said, listen, I'm going to charge you much more than $1,000, I have to wait for you 5 hours. Okay. After 5 hours, 15 big Ukrainian soldiers come in there, and he sees them holding handcuffs. He was sure that this is the end of him, he's now going to be sent into prison, never to be heard of again. At that point, he turned to Hashem and said, Hashem, listen here. I did not do this for holidays. I'm not coming here for my own enjoyment. It's something I'm doing it purely for your sake. Please help me. Send an UNOV, send whoever you want. Get me out of here. As they're coming closer to him, one big soldier comes in. He says, what's going on here? They tell him the whole thing. They're smuggling drugs and affairs. He said, let him go. Give him back his suitcase. He takes back the suitcase, sits down into the car, sits in the car. He says the car starts going, the same driver. He gets, after 5 minutes, he gets to a checkpoint. He says they stop every single car at the checkpoint, tell them to take all the suitcases. For some reason, his car, they didn't even see it. He just simply walked past, they didn't even look at it. It's as if he was completely invisible. 5 minutes later, he gets to the next checkpoint. The same thing happens again. Every single car gets stopped, every single car without fail. His car simply goes past as if they didn't see anything. He said there was about 20 checkpoints between there and Odessa. Not even a single one of them stopped him. He went all the way past and he got all the way to Odessa. He gets to Odessa 5 to 3 Friday afternoon. He comes to his Achsani, to his place where he's going to stay. He stops the car and he tells the car, I'm going to bring you the money soon. Let me first take out my suitcase. He takes out his suitcase from the car and he puts his hand into the pocket and he takes out his $500, his $1,000 and is about to pay this Ukrainian goy. All of a sudden, this car pulls away, never ever to be seen of again. He didn't give him a chance to pay the money, and that was the end of that story. The car, they're talking about the Ukrainian goy, who they wouldn't give away so easily, even $10, never mind $1,000. This thing just drove off without asking for a penny. He didn't pay him a penny. That was after waiting for him for 5 hours by the border, not a penny. Now, who that was, I don't know. That may have been Eliyahu Novi, I don't know who it was. It makes sense it should be Eliyahu Novi, the fact that he made the whole car invisible. That could work very well have been a Leonobi. But that is something that we see from the story. A person commits himself to doing something, a spiritual thing. He's going to do it all the way. He's going to do it with Mesilas Nefesh. Rabbi Nishlanim says, if you are going to do Mesilas Nefesh, I will show you. This is a story which I heard firsthand from this person called Naftali Cohen, and he lives in Eretz Yisrael, and you could all speak to him yourself and ask him the facts. These are the facts of the story. Rabbi Nishlanim should help, that we should take upon ourselves to do our kriya sitim l'toireh, pull ourselves out of our comfort zone, and then we will be zoiche to yeshias and refias, and we all zoiche that kol ha'makabel lof toireh, mavir memeni ol malchus, v'al derecheret, will be zoiche to Mashiach, tzidkaini b'mayri b'mayni umay.